Then she embassy, and it said the last Shimbiki, Shimbache, and a Kamukova, Shimbache, then a Randela Shimbache, and a Demodubitin, say Shimbashi, and a Shimbashi, and a Bangu Kores, Chizadin, and a Chetila Shimbiki, Shimbatela, Yambo Komiatela Karakum Gurasene, then she, Then you will remember that the Koala, Shimbiki, Nimbo de Karakum Gurilana, and Kovigi, Shelia, Nimitaja, Nimikum Gurese, and then Randun, Tatun, Shimbas, the Randun, Shimbe, Shimbati, Nimbo Karakum Gurilana, and a Jashu Sengum Gurese. Then Denzingi, Nimbo de la Karakum Gurse.
Not enough yet? And now a little loud now? Good. Okay. So last night, good morning. Last night we continued to look at the parting from the four clingings. And the four clingings that are referred to are in the third verse. But these are in brief, the clinging to this life. Secondly, clinging to cyclic existence. Thirdly, clinging to one's own self-interest. And thirdly, clinging to phenomena existing in the way that they appear. So these are the four clingings to be separated from or to be parted from. And the way to do so is to cultivate the antidote to these four clingings. And then the antidote we looked at briefly again last night to the first, the clinging to this one life. The antidotes are twofold. Firstly, reflecting on this precious human rebirth that we have all attained. And this reflection has various aspects, one of which is coming to see with vivid clarity the great purpose that can be achieved through this life that we've attained. And secondly, reflecting on the difficulty with which the causes were accumulated that have led to the result that we've achieved. And this is, and we reflect here in varying ways, including the rarity of this life. So that's the first antidote, coming to see this tremendous opportunity that we've achieved, this opportunity that is a precious human rebirth. Then the second antidote, that is to reflect on the impermanence of this life, the impermanence of this opportunity that we've achieved. So these two, the precious human rebirth and the impermanence of life, their cultivation, the reflection on them, is how we develop the antidote to clinging to this life. It's how we develop a mind that is a vision that is far broader than merely seeking pleasures of this life and overcoming the difficulties of this life. Then the second clinging, that is clinging to samsara, that is overcome through reflecting on the faults of cyclic existence. The third, that of clinging to one's own self-interest, this is overcome through the cultivation of the mind of bodhicitta. And the fourth, the mind of true grasping, or clinging to phenomena as existing in the way that they appear, this is overcome through the cultivation of the antidote of the wisdom realizing emptiness. And last night in particular, we spoke about how it's through the cultivation of the paths of the beings of varying capacities, so beings of smallest, intermediate, and greatest capacities, is through cultivating their paths that one overcomes these various clingings. And all three of these parts we looked at last night have as their root, as their basis, the practice of ethical conduct. Ethical conduct being the mind of restraint, the mind that is restrained and thereby restrains one's physical behavior as well as one's verbal communication. And this practice of ethical conduct we looked at last night, how without it, one cannot cultivate the parts of even the being of the smaller scope. And without ethical conduct, one will not be able to give rise to actual definite emergence, let alone effectively meditate on emptiness. And similarly, without this basis of ethical conduct, one will not be able to give rise to the parts of a bodhisattva, the mind of bodhicitta. So last night we spoke about the great importance of ethical conduct, the foundation of all realizations. This mind of restraint, which is the practice of ethics, that the mind of restraint that restrains our physical activities and our verbal activities, this is the root cause of all three of these parts, the parts of the being of smallest capacity, intermediate capacity, and greatest capacity. So therefore, without this prior cultivation of the mind of ethical conduct, then one will struggle to accumulate the causes of sufficient strength to ensure good rebirth in our next lives. Without the root cause of ethical conduct, one will not be able to effectively meditate on the sufferings of cyclic existence, and thereby will not be able to effectively cultivate the wisdom realizing emptiness. And furthermore, without this basis of ethical conduct, one will not be able to overcome one's own self-interest, one's self-cherishing mind, and develop the mind of bodhicitta. So therefore, this mind of ethics is the foundation, the basis for all these realizations. And the starting point is to ensure that our motivation is freed of the eight worldly concerns. Because it's these eight worldly concerns, the wish for material gain and to overcome material loss, for praise, for renown, to hear pleasant speech and avoid unpleasant speech, for pleasant feelings and to avoid unpleasant feelings. These eight worldly concerns are concerned only about this one life. And as long as the wish for this life's pleasures and to overcome this life's difficulties, to the strength that is dominant within us, to that extent, our motivation is going to be impeded, is going to be weakened. And thereby, we will struggle to create the causes that will lead to good rebirths. So therefore, the starting point with ethics is to overcome these eight worldly concerns and ensure a motivation that is pure, that is free from these.
Mm-hmm.
Lunga Yusum Yeju Domba, the Sushimsa Niju Domba, Tiresha, Deneza, that di combaina, Javachimanganson, the Targutu, Manson, the Kigmino, Chesna Mikoba, top two do some, Denega, some time, how will you do, and Denene, Delia, and Chuas, Samanane, and Lunga Yusumji, that Javachima, Manson, the Target, Hada Mikoba, Toya, don't the Ens and Lunga Yusum University, Saugin, and Jimmy, some bigger, some Yanazuki, Delia.
Last night we then primarily looked at the importance of ethical conduct, and then we came to in the text was the first two lines in the 12th verse, and here reference was made to meditation. So in our previous weekends we looked at study or hearing and then reflection, and now we came last night to the third, that of meditation. So meditation refers to, of course, a wide variety of topics such as impermanence, cultivating the wisdom that realizes emptiness, and so forth. But here in this context, it's specifically referring to the meditation on ethical conduct, because ethical conduct is a seed of Buddhahood, it's a foundation for all qualities. And then last night we also spoke about how to meditate on ethical conduct. So one employs both types of meditation, first analytical and thereafter placement. We spoke in some detail how to do that meditation. In the first, starting with analytical, one analyzes the topic, which is ethical conduct, thinking or meditating on the benefits that come from cultivating a mind of restraint. And here we think about the benefits that will come in terms of the achievement of our Dharma goals, as well as benefits in not just in future lives, but this life too. And then we think of the faults of not being ethical, not having this mind of restraint. And we meditate on actual situations that we have encountered and are still likely to encounter, seeing how we can respond skillfully under the influence of this mind of ethics. Then when one has meditated with analysis and come to the firm conclusion that one needs to always be relying on mindfulness and introspection, act under the influence of this mind of ethics, and a strong desire to do so arises within oneself, then one employs the meditation of placement meditation, where one places one's mind without distraction in a concentrated way on what one had, the realization one has come to in one's analytical meditation. One holds that object for as long as one can, and in this way strengthens one's familiarity, one's habituation to the mind of ethics. So last night we looked at how to do this meditation in some detail. And if we think of the variety of unethical deeds, of non-purchase deeds, I'm sure for most of you, you don't engage in most of these. You don't willingly deceive others or lie to others or steal from others. So one may well think then, well, if I don't do these things, why do I need to meditate on the faults of them and generate a commitment not to do something that I already don't do?
Denegi, Suzuki, Denegi, Machevina, and Samloti, and then a chick mess and picky Lunga used me Shanja to Nepiki Chava chick mess and the Samloti Tanku or Matavina, Samloti Nibo Gomper to go, Mare. Chisan Gom said the Yane, Yando Samta, Samloti Yane, Yando Samta, and the Samloti Nibo Church to go, Chisan Yane, Yando Samta, Lamsa Lamsa, Chick Jen to Yata, Lamsa Lamsa, Samu Court to Yangore, Deneza, and they do Shin Yane, Yando Comba, and को जेमाने अनेक जगह लम्सां लम्सां उधर लोगों ने जो जेने ठीक मारे हैं सब सामने यहाँ ने यहाँ तो जेम्बा दे जेम्बा जेम्बा रुको रुको जेम्बा दे जेम्बा दे रोते देने अनेक दूसरों को बने अनेक गांसम जिलिया अनेक जग गेजी इने अनेक सो सो सामने
That one naturally is disinclined to those types to whichever of the non-virtuous acts that one is disinclined to is because of the imprints that you yourself have accumulated in the past. So in the past you've cultivated the strong determination that, for example, stealing is unethical, I will not do that. Under any circumstances, I will not do that. So that those are virtuous imprints, and these that one already has need to be strengthened. This then links to what we spoke about last night, which was the meaning of this term meditation. Meditation has the meaning of habituation, of familiarity or familiarizing. So one is trying to develop an ever stronger habituation to virtuous minds, to gain ever greater familiarity to virtuous minds, and weaken our habituation familiarity to non-virtuous minds. So where we do have virtuous imprints, such as, for example, not stealing, these we need to cultivate, grow, ensure that they grow in strength. And this is done, like all topics of meditation, through engaging in the same topic of meditation repeatedly over a sustained period. This leads to these imprints being ever more stronger within us. And this is important because the stronger these virtuous imprints, the greater the ripening effect. So we have as a goal good rebirth or liberation or enlightenment, and the stronger the imprints that will lead to favorable outcomes, the greater the result will be. So the more we meditate on these topics, the stronger the imprints will come, the greater the result will be. And moreover, when in the future, if we do encounter situations where we may be tempted to respond in an unethical way, the stronger these imprints are, the less likely we will be. And if the imprints are strong, that thought may not even occur to us. So therefore, even if one is naturally disinclined to specific non-virtuous acts, it's still important to continue to strengthen that habituation in our meditation.
Lunga used me near Jordan Biggie, and I told him so again, never two are mad, never enough. Now, to be a shield to cover that, she covered the Niki Nubache, the Jabuti Kawa Mingore, Mingore, Chesanke, Chimangason, and the Milu Toyagi, Gusa Yoba, and Gudi Nubachunju, Mother Mena, the Nik, Nasonic, Gudi Nubacheva, Juna, D. James, and Nasonic, who care, and Yanga Yore. The Niki, that I also. Cetelia, Yane, Yano, Yane, Yano comes in Nubet, Jun, Nubet Chertawaina, Tinik Nubet Chertawadu, and it, Manazu Kiwama, Nasonic Yeg, Lesa Yubaina, that eating Anzuki, Kiwachimalhada, Mugo, and Toyagi, Tutum Sued, Nubet Chertawaza, and Anzuki, 시디 갑라 디기 제보디 아니 민도와 교화 미양 교화 치마드 미야게 디 용고레 디야 용고레 아니 디 마세 마주기야 지 게디네 하네 야도 곰비네 곰바에서 아니 시로 치디 갑다 오다다 교화 치마 하다 미고 토구에 토벌쇼 선배 삼로디 아니 그 젠투야게 개발 용고레 곰시디 메나 아니 젠투야 갈래 갖고 차고로와
Here it's important to understand what happens at the time of death in terms of how our next life comes about. At the time of death, the strongest imprint on our continuum is what will ripen and propel our next rebirth. If that strongest imprint on our continuum is a virtuous imprint, we attain rebirth in a happy migration to human or God. If the strongest imprint on our continuum is non-virtuous, that propels to rebirth in the lower realms. So this needs to be understood clearly, because when we have certainty of this, we understand the need not only to accumulate virtue, but virtue of great strength. So if we have an honest look at our life, and we see whether we have accumulated stronger virtuous or non-virtuous imprints, this, if we see that the non-virtuous imprints that we have accumulated are likely to be of great strength, this should serve to encourage us to accumulate powerful virtuous imprints. And then if we add to this reflection, what am I likely to have accumulated in previous lives, in lives where my circumstances were perhaps very different from now, perhaps where in a non-human rebirth, or a rebirth with a very different ethical framework, what strength of imprint may I well have accumulated in the past, and those imprints still abide on my continuum? And if we take that into account as well, we should again be encouraged not just to accumulate virtue, but virtue of great strength. And therefore, even where we have the imprint, the habituation now, not to engage in certain non-virtuous deeds, strengthen those imprints, because that leads to stronger virtuous deeds and the greater likelihood of a good rebirth. And also, when we are in a time and a place where one faces the danger of making an unethical decision, the stronger those imprints on our continuum, the less likely we are to make such an error. So what this is coming down to is the meaning of meditation, which is habituation, familiarity. So we try to strengthen our habituation to minds of virtue. And these minds of virtue come from a virtuous motivation, such as a good rebirth, not wanting to fall into the lower realms. And the stronger our habituation to engage in virtue under the influence of such a motivation, the stronger the imprints we will accumulate, and the stronger our familiarity with that way of thinking will naturally arise within us, due to meditation meaning habituation or familiarity. In the context of last night, we spoke about then the need for ethical outlook. This mind, that is a mind of restraint, that restrains not only our mind, but thereby our body and our speech. And to do so with a motivation for at least a good rebirth, and not to be primarily concerned about the well-being of this mere life. And we spoke then about the faults that follow from being overly preoccupied by this one life. And this then brings us now to continue in the text. And so here we, the 12th verse, the third line. As for meditative practice pursued for this life's sake, it brings distractions when residing in solitude. It makes you adept in the art of empty chatter. It makes you defame those engaged in study and reflection. It makes you jealous towards other meditators. So cast aside the meditative concentration of the eight concerns. As for meditative practice pursued for this life's sake. So this then refers to someone who's entering, for example, into a meditation retreat, or perhaps just has a daily practice, but their motivation, so this life's sake refers to their motivation is dominated by the eight worldly concerns. So they would have perhaps the thought that I am going into retreat. People know that I'm going into retreat. I'm sure they'll be impressed about this. I'm sure they'll be talking very favorably about me. They'll be praising me. So this is a clear example of someone whose motivation is mixed with eight worldly concerns. That may be their sole motivation, or it may be part of their motivation. This wish for fame, for reputation, to be praised and respected by others. So these eight worldly concerns come down to the mind of attachment, the wish for a reputation, for example. Attachment is, of course, an afflictive mind. The stronger the afflictive mind is, the weaker the virtue will follow. So if this person is meditating on ethics and their motivation is mixed with eight worldly concerns, they'll be wanting people they'll be hoping people will praise them for being in retreat, hoping to be later seen by them as a very ethical person and thereby gain respect. So what we're seeing here is a motivation that is concerned with this life's sake. And to whatever extent one is concerned by things such as reputation, to that extent, attachment is stronger, and to that extent, the virtue is weakened.
chipenjo raya dani na jine rawa nengi dijewo sambe samla drama ra kora jine dini dusi pe samlo nale dusi namdo drama ra kigri yes.
And the fourth line, it brings distractions when residing in solitude. So here this word distractions, it's not the word that we normally associate with mental distractions. So it can be translated as the hustle and bustle of our worldly life, where we engage in many mundane activities and distracting activities. So if one goes into a place of solitude, one is removing oneself from the hustle and bustle of daily life so that one can focus on one's spiritual development. But if one's, to the extent that one's motivation is pervaded by the eight worldly concerns, one may be somewhere physically isolated, but mentally one is not isolated. One's mind is still caught up in the distractions, the activities, the excitement of daily life, in the sense that one is thinking about one's reputation. One is thinking about what others are saying about oneself. And then one is thinking about the future. When one comes out of retreat and returns to society, how people will respond to me differently. How others will react in my presence, knowing that I've done this retreat and meditated on whatever the topics are. And one will, moreover, be making great plans for one's various activities when one's retreat is over. So this is the meaning of distractions. And so whilst one may have physically moved to a place of isolation, mentally one is not in a place of isolation. One is rather consumed by mundane activities, mundane thoughts. And the result of this is that whatever virtuous meditation topics such as ethics one is cultivating, their strength will be weak. And their strength will be weak because the mind is afflicted, and in particular afflicted by the eight worldly concerns, which are expressions of attachment.
And the chick Mamoshi, the Sudim Yabo Yamen Jemena, so you get Sudim Ganekan, Sunku Yume, and the chick Ganekanis, Suna Pando Carriore, Masumba, and Yemi, Nimi Carriore, Sam Nodilia, Madame Roa, Carson Susulia, Damia Dion, and Gumu Sungu said, Pai Chilu, number two, and some other, Mevanza, and Sudimgi, Tanda Tang. And Chia Hoshing Machine Vanza, the Emilia, all that Sudum Chichik Sungu, Ni Chiyu, Sadachik, Pamangora Shene, and Sosuria, and Chiki, Ichi and the year daughter Mangoshin, the Niki, and Nacha, Nacha, the Niki, Dunda, maybe Kish Mangoshi, Mangoshi, Kasne Kulon Kuron, Dabon, the Carrier Sene, Sosuki Tamyanda, Yoyada, Sosuki Tunya, Yoyagi, Chakwe on the Soyza.
Now coming to the 13th verse, it makes you adept in the art of empty chatter. It's empty chatter or meaningless speech. So this then refers to if someone is engaging in meditation, again perhaps on ethical conduct, but their mind is not yet restrained, due to their motivation being mixed with eight worldly concerns. Then these eight worldly concerns are attachments, are expressions of attachment. So therefore one's mind is going to be going to a variety of topics and perhaps what is happening in society, rather than being focused on the object of meditation. And this then, even if one is by oneself, can be likened to engaging in idle speech or meaningless speech or idle gossip, even if one's on one's own, because one's mind is preoccupied with chatter about things other than one's topic. And then later when one meets others, either after one's retreat or if it's referring to perhaps one's daily practice, and later when one meets others, because one's motivation is mixed with attachment, one is very likely to talk at length about, oh, I'm meditating on this topic and these are my understandings, and one perhaps unintentionally is showing off, trying to impress others, trying to belittle others. And this can lead to one coming across as pretentious and hypocritical. And this comes about not necessarily intentionally, but because of the fault in one's motivation. With its motivation of attachment, one then expresses this through one's way of acting and speaking, and one speaks in a way motivated by attachment. And this leads to one to showing off and talking about what one's understanding of the topic, thinking that one's understanding is something profound. And this only leads to the virtue that has been accumulated being of weak strength. The next line, it makes you defame those engaged in study and reflection. So here, to the extent that the eight worldly concerns pervade one's way of thinking, to the extent that one is preoccupied with happiness in this life and overcoming the problems and difficulties of this life, then it will lead one to criticize one's fellow practitioners, those who are engaged in studying, those who are reflecting on the teachings they're receiving, and those who are also meditating on those teachings. So one is criticizing those, and what does it say about oneself when criticizing one's fellow practitioners? This is likely to come from a motivation of attachment that is being expressed with a mind of competitiveness, where one is feeling better than one's those that one is competing with. So one doesn't see, it's not seeing the, one's spiritual practitioners, fellow spiritual practitioners, as one's companions cultivating the path, progressing towards enlightenment, but one sees them as competitors. And this comes from a place, or a mind of attachment. And then, if one is speaking in such a way, looking down on others, deprecating one's fellow practitioners, this is, of course, unethical. This is not coming from a mind that is restrained, so an ethical mind. And this shows the lack of ethics within oneself, and therefore the lack of effectiveness of one's meditation to transform one's mind and develop a powerful, pervasive ethical outlook. Because if one has developed an ethical mind, one will have this mind of restraint and it will restrain one's speech. And one will not look down on others, one will not deprecate others. So therefore, if we look at our way of thinking and we see this naturally arising within us, this competitiveness towards our fellow practitioners, and even if that's not expressed verbally, if this is how we readily and naturally think, we need to then look closer at our motivation and remove these eight worldly concerns from our motivation. Someone who is sincerely cultivating the minds of the Buddha Dharma and who is separating these eight worldly concerns, they are naturally not going to deprecate and look down on their fellow practitioners. Rather, they are naturally going to rejoice in the virtuous activities of others, knowing that they are accumulating the seeds of lasting happiness, and they are doing so to the best of their capability. So here, a genuine practitioner, instead of accumulating the non-virtue of looking down on others, they are accumulating the virtue of rejoicing in the endeavors, the virtuous endeavors of others. This term that we have here, study, it's the literal word is to hear, so hearing teachings. The meaning is to study what one hears. And this is something of crucial importance and should not be underestimated. Because to the extent that one has studied well, one's reflections will go well. And to the extent that one has reflected effectively on what one has studied, one's meditation will go well. So there's this definite sequence. And the reason for this is, in order to be able to reflect well, one needs to understand what one is reflecting on. And if one's knowledge of the topic is a little general and therefore a little vague, one's realization or the understanding that will come from that reflection on that will be similar, a little general, a little vague. Rather, one needs to keep hearing teachings, because through continuously hearing teachings, one comes to understand the correct sequence of trainings, and one gains within oneself conviction in this particular sequence that one needs to start here and then progress to there, and not start where one is naturally inclined. Moreover, through continuously receiving teachings, one always hears more detail about the varying stages. So one's knowledge and insight into the varying stages of the meditation is deepened. And then as one's knowledge increases, one continues to reflect. So these two come together. One reflects on what one is hearing, and this, as one's knowledge develops, so too does the depth of one's reflection. And as the depth of one's reflection develops, as one continues to hear more teachings, study further, subtler meanings, more profound meanings in those teachings become evident. The words may not be that different, but one's understanding of those words will be. So therefore, this process of study and reflection, or hearing and reflection, needs to be done repeatedly over a sustained period. And when it has been done effectively, meditation is much easier. So if one looks at one's mind, and one sees, as we're seeing in this context here, a mind of competitiveness towards others, a mind that criticizes others, looks down on others, this is a sign that our own inner development is far from complete. This is a sign that we need to look at our own motivation and come to understand our own way of thinking. Because a genuine practitioner, a practitioner whose motivation is not dominated by the eight worldly concerns, will understand their impact, and will understand the impact that they've had on themselves, and therefore will understand the impact it has on others. So that's such a person, based on knowledge and experience, will not criticize others who are struggling to overcome their eight worldly concerns, but will rather have great understanding and empathy for their situation. So therefore, we need to look at our own minds with honesty, with clarity, and this will give us an indication of where we are and what we still need to do.
Gomya ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、 지난 소수기 지진 추계 단 지역 토네 기아 두구에 라비어도 지난 소소데 야가르 미샤나 야가선 차도 지지 소소리에 담냐다도 충주를 삼지 되니기 토네 안전이야 차도 지지 균주 먹고 지기 되지.
Third line, it makes you jealous towards other meditators. So here again, we're in the context of study, reflection, and meditation. So you defame those engaged in study and reflection and are jealous towards your fellow meditators. So again, this is coming from a motivation that is dominated by the eight worldly concerns, by the desires for pleasures of this life and to overcome the problems and difficulties of this life. So this then includes wanting to be respected, wanting to receive praise from others, wanting to receive the honor from others. And here, if we see within ourselves that we're criticizing our fellow practitioners by saying, oh, they're not so good and they have these faults and that fault, this is what we're explicitly saying. We're explicitly pointing out the faults of others. Implicitly, though, we are saying, my faults are not as strong as theirs. They have this fault in a very strong way. I do not. And this is likely to come from this place of jealousy where one is wanting to be respected for having greater qualities than the person that is being criticized, the person that you are putting down. So one may not be saying this explicitly. One may not even be aware of it. But implicitly, one is seeing oneself as better than others, and when one is expressing this view, one is broadcasting to others, I am better than that person in these ways. This is not an attitude of a mind that is restrained, of an ethical mind. This is coming from a place of attachment and wanting to receive recognition and praise in this life, wanting to have more students than others, wanting to receive more offerings and therefore have more influence than others. This is not a motivation of a true spiritual practitioner.
Loki, Chosu, Gazi, Nubacheta, Loki, Chosu, Songa, Samdadi, Samdadi, Nizuakom, Chosu, 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 그게
So the purpose of engaging in meditation is to apply oneself to virtue, especially if one goes into a retreat. One is then wanting to separate oneself from the worldly activities and focus on applying oneself to virtue, accumulating virtue as much as possible. So what does this mean? What does Buddhist practice mean? What does meditation mean? It means keeping the mind focused on the object of virtue. So this is the meaning of practice, of Buddhist practice, keeping the mind focused on virtue. And one goes into an isolated place, goes into retreat, so as to reduce the external distractions and therefore the conditions that lead to internal distractions. But if we are in retreat or in meditation session and our mind is going towards others, thinking about their faults, and our mind is going to ourselves, thinking about our great qualities, look at me in retreat, this is contrary to what we're doing. We're supposed to be sitting here in meditation with our mind on the object of virtue, such as ethical conduct, not thinking about, aren't I wonderful in retreat? I'm so much more ethical than this person and that person. That is not the purpose of Buddhist practice. That is not what we're trying to do. And then if we express this way of thinking, then the fault is even greater than we're sharing our unethical behavior with others. Rather, a genuine practitioner, when they see such thoughts arising with them, that becomes an object to be transformed on the path. And rather, they will strive to generate minds of love and compassion for others. They will know that the mind of attachment is leading to jealousy for others, competitiveness towards others. And this needs to be transformed on the path, and rather minds of love and compassion should be generated for others. If that is effectively done, one's meditation will be effective and powerful. If it's not, and one is thinking about the faults of others and criticizing others, the results of one's meditation will be poor. Fourth line, to cast aside the meditative concentration of the eight concerns. This line has been said explicitly. These eight worldly concerns, or these eight worldly dharmas, have to be abandoned. We need to look at, first we need to understand what these are, and then look at our motivation, and continuously be vigilant for their arisal. What we've been looking at here is the fault that comes from having a motivation that is primarily concerned about the happiness of this life and overcoming problems of this life. So these eight worldly concerns. And if one has a motivation where these are strong, then our meditation or our retreat will not go well. So even whether we're trying to do meditation at home or go somewhere isolated, we may be physically isolated, but mentally our mind is still caught up in mundane life. And this is expressed through us criticizing others, looking down on others, looking at the faults of others. And this is not the purpose of retreat. And it ends up in us being hypocritical practitioners. Instead of the mind being focused on virtue, our mind is still remaining ordinary and we're not trying to transform it. Rather, we should ensure that our mind is focused on virtue. And when it comes under the influence of these the eight worldly concerns. We should rather turn our mind back to virtue. And here we need to reflect on the impermanence of this precious life and the possibility, the real possibility of falling into the lower realms. And the great fault of that is not only the intense suffering that one experiences, but that one cannot live a meaningful life. One cannot live a meaningful life if fallen into the lower realms, because one cannot develop spiritually. So therefore, when meditating on ethics, the foundation for all good qualities of the path, we need to ensure our motivation is freed of these eight worldly concerns and is focused on the attainment of genuine Dharma goals. In this presentation, we've primarily looked at the need to have one's motivation freed from the eight worldly concerns when engaging in meditation on ethical conduct. This is, of course, though, the case with whatever object of meditation one has. So, for example, if one is meditating on generosity, cultivating the wish to give. Again, it's imperative to be freed of a motivation of eight worldly concerns. Because if we, for example, we're going to engage in an act, or prior to engaging in an act of generosity, whether it's we're going to give something of material value, or we're going to share our skills and our own good qualities with others, if prior to engaging in that we're cultivating a motivation, but this motivation is mixed with the eight worldly concerns, we will hope to receive something in return. We will want, at the very least, a smile and a thank you. We want recognition from as many people as possible. We want praise. We want prestige. Then when this is not fulfilled, we will immediately become at least disappointed. We are not likely to want to help them again. We'll see this person as whilst in need, not showing sufficient gratitude to us. So why should I help them? This is again contrary to a pure motivation. And the same with patience. Meditating on patience, whether dealing with obstacles arising from external conditions or from our own inner turmoil, or patience needed when practicing the Dharma. So meditating on patience, trying to develop a mind that stays undisturbed in the face of adversity. If our motivation is dominated by the eight worldly concerns, that means it's dominated by attachment. And this means that when we encounter a situation where we need to respond with patience, that mind is not going to arise. Rather, a mind such as attachment or its resulting anger and annoyance and frustration will arise. And this shows how our meditation on patience is ineffective due to the weakness of the motivation. And this is the case for whatever meditation topic one is engaged in. The motivation is crucial. And we can see how this plays out in perhaps in our own life, or certainly in society, where one sees that another person can be of benefit to oneself, then people generally go out of their way to build a relationship with them. And if then that person does not fulfill your desired wishes, the response is to get angry with them, to get disappointed, probably get angry, and turns away from them. And this again shows that the motivation was self-interest. The motivation was one of attachments, one of eight worldly concerns, of wanting to receive. So the purpose of this topic here, the purpose of the Buddha Dharma, is we need to come to know ourselves better. We need to look at ourselves with honesty, come to know ourselves, recognize our good qualities and develop them further, recognize the aspects of our character that we need to weaken and eliminate, and do so with vigor. We need to clearly see that from attachment, only suffering follows. And to the extent that we can free our motivation from attachment, stronger virtue will come, greater benefit for ourselves and others will follow. Yeah, now we come in the context of the four clingings, we come to the conclusion of the first. If you cling to this life, you are not a practitioner. And we've spoken about the antidote to clinging to this life, which is the reflection on precious human rebirth and death and impermanence, so as to overcome the eight worldly concerns and focus on striving for good rebirths. So within the context of the divisions of the Lamrim, of the graduated stages to enlightenment, this training are the practices that are in accordance with a being of smallest capacity.
Lamrim Jeba in the Kibu Chumu Lamjibanyam Jedan Chagordi. Then Diniki, young 接着起码马上来他就他的米国往特别上大了哇那第一个呢第二个就给我的个这女博士七兄才的公路的都比那个娃就接给娃的女博士七兄的这个公路的两个就给我的个这女博士七兄才过来这个公路的两个就给我的个这娃就妈了两个三九个包头骨都七三三九个包头骨都七三当年三九个包头了七点两个年龄刚头都接七点了头毛头发呢接我起码两个哎这娃说的娃的来他的接他的米国往特别上大了俺们另外是你去对面出去送给三九送给你三九年龄的出去面两个姐姐面两个随便两个孙女面的那么两个姐姐都接完了第二年龄的公路接就三几公路那些
So through these meditations of a being of small capacity, one will develop the burning conviction to ensure that one attains freedom from falling into the lower realms, and rather accumulates the causes to be born in the happy migrations of a human or god. And with such a motivation, one particularly guards one's ethics, develops a mind of ethical conduct, as well as then the complementary meditations of generosity and patience and choice, perseverance, and those four then rounded off with aspirational prayers. So this is how a being of small capacity trains. And furthermore, in this reflection, because the two key points of reflection were precious human rebirth, but also death and impermanence. And this is a crucial meditation in that when one has recognized that the valuable jewel that one holds in one's hand, but that this opportunity that we have, this is not only finite, but there is no certainty to the length of our lifespan. When that realization arises in us in a powerful, overriding manner, we will readily commit to using what remains of this life well. Using what remains of this life well means ensuring that the minds of the Dharma pervade our every activity. So here we're speaking about the antidote to overcoming a mind that's preoccupied with the mere pleasures of this one life and overcoming the mere problems of this one life. So this is in the Lamrim tradition, is a being of small capacity or being of initial capacity. And this is a person striving just for a good rebirth. And this is the starting point to be considered an actual practitioner, where one's mind is dominated by achieving the causes for good rebirth in the next life. And here, as with all practices, the resulting virtue comes about independent on a virtuous activity motivated by a virtuous intention. The stronger that motivating mind, the stronger the resulting virtue will be. Hence the emphasis on the motivation, not so much on the virtuous acts, such as an object of meditation, a topic of meditation, but the motivating mind. And if the practitioner has a greater capacity. They will take this understanding that they have come to through meditating on a precious human rebirth and death and impermanence, and thereby committing to engage in the practices of ethics, generosity, patience, and joyous perseverance. And they will take this understanding and apply it to others, understanding that no being wants to be born in the lower realms, and those who are there are desperate to be freed from such a situation. And take this understanding further, developing the mind of bodhicitta, the commitment to striving to become a Buddha for the sake of others. So such a practitioner then is generating minds of love and compassion, but knowing that to actually become a bodhisattva takes tremendous amounts of virtue and effort, and that may well not be achieved in this life, and therefore one has to ensure that in the next life, whilst one is still so vulnerable to falling in the lower realms, one has to achieve good rebirths in order to continue one's spiritual development, in order to continue the cultivation of love and compassion and the eventual attainment of bodhicitta. So such a person is motivated by the desire to eventually become a Buddha, and to do so needs to become a bodhisattva, cultivate the parts of a bodhisattva. And to do so, they too engage in the meditations of ethics and generosity and patience and joyous perseverance. So they are not a mere practitioner of smallest capacity or initial capacity, but they are engaging in the practices that are in common with a being of smallest capacity. So that the first type of person who is sincerely just striving for a good rebirth, they are a mere practitioner of smallest capacity. The second type of person who is engaging in the same activities, but with a more powerful motivation, a motivation that is looking towards Buddhahood, but they are not yet an actual practitioner of the great scope. They are engaging in the practices that are in common with a being of smallest capacity. I need to correct my mistake. So I'll just re-say the last bit, this time free of mistake, hopefully. So a being who's a mere practitioner of the small scope is engaging in the practices of ethics and so forth in order to attain a good rebirth. A being who's engaging in those same practices but with a wish to attain enlightenment for the sake of others is engaging in those same practices, but they are engaging in practices that are in common with a being of small capacity. They are not a being of small capacity, but they are engaging in practices that are in common with a being of small capacity.
chego pugore, the shes machine jimbarua, shesun chebo cheva charcure, and delia, medo puyarota, and a cheme puyarota, and a bear puyaro, seven, dinner pubigi corong and chebu mirror yungor, Anatolia, dininda, dinigi puya the kishimbori chagorwa, dinig. Then, and there, dimin bigata, me, a Give each out to Ventil Roche Aruda, Dinio Bene, Chico Sosuke, Mangu Mene, Chicket, New York of Jipu in a Susuguna Delia, Semja Tamji and Sanjo Goba to be Chido, Yins and Tikiwachima, Jigi Yapinjo Yahura in Chivis, some Madanje, called Dango and Marco, Semja Sanjo Goba to be Chido Yin, Samje, D Dondala, and Shanley Pembish, Pugio, Setigio, Sambaina, and Sosolia, and Giwachima, you think. ji 네 되게 전주에 염내자 개와 되게 개위 자와 염내자 배 약보려 삼제 집배 약보려선 가오겁니다 한 마오배네 기디 나가 산주고 마토여 봐도 되게 소소에 염내 약보시야 라와다 셀레이네 소소기 파 규구제제 아니 개와 자와 죽투여기 배주지 배 약보려샤 삼비기 되네 삼다는 전주 차그로와 되네 삼다네 되네 타마들이야 아는 거 주게 땅이 개 개와 주버 될라 되네 아니 개와 치마 아니 지금 나선에 타를 하다 미고 와 톱톱하다 된 될라 되네 게 아니 잡아 치미 취 냠내 야고 지에 두바다 신행이 신행이 동화 세야다 안 디기 두비야라야 비제 야고 지에 두어쇼 선배게 안 되네게 냠내 제야래 아니 기회 신행 되게다 생이 된 바지 체제 아니 야고 용어 쇼 되네게 몰음 자야지 세상은 주게 나 디링 가사다 디링 그 신망고시에 되게다 돈다라 먼저 디삼다에 되게다
So last night and this morning we've spoken a lot about the importance of ethical conduct. And this is, as we saw, it's the root of all attainments, whether it's the attainment of a good rebirth or liberation or enlightenment. Without ethics, none of this is possible. The other practices that, or its companion practices though, are also crucial. And this we need to be very clear on so that we do cultivate these minds. So ethics needs to be accompanied by generosity. Because ethics leads to an imprint of ethical conduct ripens and prepares a rebirth, it leads to a rebirth in the happier migrations as a human or God. But for that rebirth to be a fully qualified precious human rebirth, we need to have favorable circumstances around us. We need to not be in a place where we have tremendous, for example, financial hardship, or where we experience difficulties in acquiring the various conditions, not just financial, but the various conditions that are required in order to be able to spiritually develop. So therefore, these causes need to be accumulated, and this is the practice of generosity, the cultivation of the wish to give. So here, in meditation, we cultivate this wish, and then we can act under the influence of this wish. So I'm sure most of you at home, you have a Buddha image, and you may well already have water bowls in front of it. So when you make these water bowl offerings, even if it's just one bowl, ensure you've got a good motivation. Because the size of the offering is not of primary importance. It's the motivating mind behind the offering. If we have the wish to become a being of great benefit in this world, to become a bodhisattva, and make that offering with the intention to become a bodhisattva and eventually a Buddha for the sake of others, and make this offering as a representative of all suffering sentient beings, make the offering as if you were doing it on their behalf, so that all beings can accumulate the virtue of offering water bowls and flowers and incense to the Buddhas. And again, we do so with as pure a motivation, as separated from the eight worldly concerns as possible. thereby one creates vast stores of merit, irrespective of the size of the offering. And the second companion meditation is that of patience. So this is the mind that stays undisturbed in the face of adversity. And if we've been effective in our cultivation of the mind of ethics and generosity, then the mind of patience, in dependence on those two, arises easily. We will not want to bring harm to others because we are ethical. We will want to help others because we have generated a mind of patience, a mind of generosity. And then when we are encountering difficulties, whether from the external world or from our own inner turmoil or in our Dharma practice, we will want to overcome these and overcome them with a mind that is undisturbed and a mind that is remaining on virtue. And we will want to do this so that we're creating the causes to have good relations with others, harmonious relationships, that naturally form harmonious relations with others in our future, and our sense powers are faultless. And then the third companion mind to ethics is that of joyous perseverance, a mind that takes delight in virtue and wants to persevere no matter what obstacles we have. So here we rejoice in the virtue that we and others are accumulating, seeing the changes in our spiritual development, and we'll want to persevere in our daily meditation practice or in the difficulties we may experience in retreat and so forth. Here we're creating the causes that in our future lives we'll be naturally inclined towards virtue, we'll be naturally inclined to seek out a spiritual path, we'll be naturally inclined not to harm others, naturally inclined to live a life of meaning and a life where we benefit others. And then lastly, we make prayers, or stainless prayers, prayers separated from the eight worldly concerns, that in all future lives, so that I can continue my progression to become a bodhisattva and become a Buddha for the sake of others, I must only attain good rebirths that are precious, so that I can continue to cultivate the minds of a Mahayana Dharma through, at a young age, meeting a spiritual teacher, Mahayana spiritual teacher, and having a strong yearning to receive teachings and to cultivate them in my mind. And in this way, we make strong aspirational prayers to continue to strive for enlightenment. So this, in brief, is the meaning of what we've been looking at both this morning and last night. As we've heard now, the cultivation of the mind of ethics, this creates the cause that when it propels a rebirth, that one will be reborn in a happy migration. If the imprint that propels a rebirth is non-virtuous, it will lead to one falling into the lower realms. So therefore, ethics is crucial, because it is what will lead to a rebirth as a human or a god. And if one, for example, in this life, practices, for example, generosity well, but is not ethical, then the imprint that will lead one to be, its rebirth in the next life is likely to be one that leads to the lower realms. And then we can, if we look at, and then how would such a being who has been generous and accumulated powerful seeds of generosity but hasn't been ethical, how is their next life likely to play out? Well, we can see that around us there's abundant evidence here, where beings who have been unethical have ended up being born as animals, but they've been generous, so they have fabulous conditions for the animal realm, fabulous conditions around them. And we see this in household pets. They have, if they are in a loving household, they are, have conditions where they want for nothing. Very different from animals in other households or other parts of the world, where they just have to scavenge for their food. So here we can see the ripening result of unethical behavior and generous behavior coming together. But other beings, they're born as animals, so they're the ripening result of unethical behavior. They're in impoverished environments, so they have the ripening result of not being generous, or they're not experiencing the result of having been generous, rather. And we can see then a third impact, and the impact of patience. So some animals, people naturally, when people, other animals naturally like, naturally get on with, naturally feel comfortable in their presence. There's the ripening result of patience, but without the ripening result of ethics. Other animals, whomever sees them, becomes fearful, maybe throws a stone at them, beats them. There, they experience the ripening result of unethical behavior and not experiencing the ripening result of patience. So here, from this illustration, we can see the primacy of ethics, but the need for it to be also be accompanied by generosity and patience and so forth. So we can also see how this plays out in the human realms. And so here I'm going to make this point so as to emphasize, because last night and this morning I've emphasized a lot the need for ethics, that is the basis of all realizations. And this, I hope, is has been clearly understood. But now I'm wanting to emphasize that whilst one must concentrate or focus on ethics, one also needs to engage in the other causes, the accumulation of the other causes that lead to a precious human rebirth. And we can see our world is full of more than 7 billion beings. They've all achieved a human rebirth as the result of a imprints that ripened of ethical conduct. So they've all achieved a similar cause, and therefore was born in the same realm. But we see a wide variety of conditions and lived experiences of beings. And that then will come from the variety of other causes that have or have not accumulated and are or are not ripening in this life. So those who are experiencing tremendous material impoverishment, hunger, and living in conditions where there's not enough water, so they are not experiencing ripening results of having practiced generosity, though they are experiencing the ripening results of having been ethical. Likewise, others have a personality where people, they don't easily get on with others, where people, they find their relationships are very argumentative, or they have their sense powers are not well developed. So there we see they are not experiencing the ripening results of patience. And then many people have no interest in the Dharma, and therefore they haven't made prayers to come into contact with the Dharma. Others, they are not naturally inclined to virtue, or their inclination to virtue is sporadic. So there we see that the ripening results of joyous perseverance are not being experienced. So through thinking like this, we can see the importance not only of ethics, but its companion minds of joyous generosity, patience, joyous perseverance, and prayers. So all five of these practices need to be accumulated and accumulated well. And moreover, we also should reflect on what we have achieved. Look at our own lives. And if we look at our own lives, we know what we have done in the past, which means we know the potential that we have. So this then, these two reflections should lead us, one, to having a strength of mind that we know that we can achieve something phenomenal, and two, that it's imperative we use this opportunity well. Now we, having concluded the first of the four clingings to be parted from, I hope that you've got enough information and the inspiration to apply this to your meditation. Because primarily, what one is trying to do is one develop a strength of mind, that comes from recognizing what we have achieved, and the importance of living this life in a meaningful way. That's the two divisions of the one part. The companion to that is to, having come to understand the eight worldly concerns, to look at one's motivation and try and be aware of their arisal and limit their strength and eventually remove them, so that because the purer one's motivation, the stronger the virtue that one will accumulate. Then this afternoon, we will start with the second of the four clingings to be abandoned, and that is the clinging to the realms of samsara, or to cyclic existence. And there we'll start to look at the antidote to that, which is the reflection on the faults of samsara.